Felipe, can you talk about how did you just give each composer like total freedom, or were there some guidelines? How did the actual project come about?
There were no guidelines. It was total free, but we talked about what the concept of the album should be, and we came up with this idea of the raíces imaginadas. I guess could be translated as imagined roots, I guess. So the idea was to approach the early instruments by making new music, but we talk about this kind of like a hypothetic music, or some kind of a speculative approach to the composition process. And some of the pieces, like Tomás's pieces, has more direct relationship to music from the past, and some others are more abstract, like Igor's, and I guess mine is some kind in between. So we all have different compositional languages, and we didn't want to like put any restrictions or guidelines really, but the important thing was that we wanted to explore the sonorities of the instruments, and in some way, although all of us do it in a different way, I guess, to give value to the fact that these instruments are unique. They have their own voice, they have their own particularities. And I think for instance, I guess Tomás and also Vicente explodes that in a very nice way, that you can easily recognize in some of the ornamentation and some of the performing practices that can then arise during their pieces, for instance.
As Felipe said, really excited to write not only for these instruments, but for these, for players, for early music players who have a very different approach to the written page, in my experience, than kind of standard rep players or contemporary music or players usually do, who usually kind of perform, you know, literally what's on the page, and then they call it a day. That's kind of my experience with a lot of these situations. And early music players are kind of, they're more similar to people who come from the jazz tradition, where, you know, the page is a starting point, but they'll bring something of their own to their interpretation. And so they'll try to understand, you know, what's this phrase doing? Or, you know, should I like separate these two notes? Like there's a little bit more, more kind of creative work that they do in the performance of the music that I was really excited by, because I also come from a jazz background myself. So that's something that I find very rewarding in a musical collaboration.
Igor, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. And I'm sure Tomás will add to this too, because in his piece in particular, the references to idiomatic Baroque writing are more explicit. But in my case, I'll just mention that I feel like I hardly wrote anything of my own. And that's my favorite kind of piece, you know, the one that is one page long, the last 10 minutes, certainly my favorite kind to write. but in all seriousness though, I think we all did, as we were embarking in this project, we got the grant from the federal government of Chile that provided us the necessary funds to have a little commission for ourselves, and then the larger percentage of that fund to go towards the paying the ensemble and the sound engineer and the place where we would record, etc. And as we started that process, we were chatting amongst ourselves. It's not as common in America, but in South America and the rest of the world, we have an app on our cell phones called WhatsApp, And that had a group where all the four of us were in and a representative of the ensemble. And we had a Google folder where we shared documents, and we were constantly discussing and learning idiomatic Baroque techniques, from keyboard tablatures to, hey, this is the way, you know, they did it in France at this particular time, but they did it in Italy. Are you going to use that? To temperaments. So that was part of our communal learning process, I would say. But in my case, then I took that and they sort of like, all right, so we know about that. And then I tried to integrate that as a concept abstractly, not necessarily using the same trills they would have used or whatever, but as a concept, this idea that we're talking about now of a certain performative freedom and co-composition, perhaps that maybe not as far as calling it that, but this act of collaboration, surely, into a more modern notation that would enable those musicians to bring their expertise to the table, while for myself, not parroting something from the past for the sake of it, but trying to make it my own and sort of reinvent the wheel a little bit in my case. And in the end, it was lovely. I had things that were fixed. And of course, in the process, we talked to the musicians and we agreed upon things that are not on the page. This was also a beautiful part of the process for me personally. But in the end, you know, that which was written is less than that which actually was performed in I think in each of our cases, but in mine in particular.
And Tomas?
Yeah, I find that one of the fascinating aspects of this type of work is that Baroque instrumentalists are used to take some liberties when they play a Baroque score. And if you give them the right cues, they will start playing in fascinating and sometimes unpredictable ways. So if they recognize, dotted rhythms, they might start playing with a kind of a French overture groove, and if you give them the right cues, they will play the ornaments in a very free and improvisatory way, kind of extemporaneous way. But of course, you have to provide the concept that the players will understand. If the score is very abstract, they won't be comfortable adding, Baroque ornaments or Baroque trills. They will just play a trill. But if they recognize that, oh, this is a situation which harks back to a Baroque situation, they will start to play in a very expressive way. They will do that without, being necessarily conscious. They will try to find a more consonant tuning. They will themselves naturally tune the thirds a little lower so that major chords are more resonant. And if you give them, that type of context, you start to get, wonderful timbres and sonorities and ways of playing that you wouldn't generally have from a romantic or contemporary player in general.
Yeah, that's kind of where I get overwhelmed thinking about, it's been so long since I've played Bach or anything, and I always remember there were so many different kinds of ornaments, and I'm like, oh my God, does this one trill up? Does it trill down? Does it, And it was kind of a pain because like my teacher was always, you have to do it exactly this way. You have freedom mm-hmm. in some cases, but the ornaments were always kind of like very specific, the way that they wanted them, which to me as a composer just seems, like a bit overwhelming to use that syntax.
And mm-hmm. I think that's interesting in this kind of ensemble because in some trends of contemporary music, everything seems to be a bit plain or a bit too abstract sometimes. Like you play what the score states, and depending on how comprehensive and exhaustive is your notation, you will get different results. But if your score is written in a very exhaustive way, you may leave little room for the performers to deploy what they know, what they have. So I think it's interesting in this kind of ensemble that you can play around with these more idiosyncratic ways of playing and performing practices that the musicians have.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you certainly wouldn't want to write a new complexity piece. You know, there'd be no room for them to do anything. Which, in my opinion, you don't want to write a new complexity piece, period. But but that's just my opinion.
I mean, never say never.
Yeah, never say never. Never say never.
Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted. I am talking with four composers in Chile about this fascinating new album called Raíces Imaginadas, or Imagined Roots. The composers are Felipe Pinto d'Aguiar, Tomás Koyatik, Vicente Hansen Atria, and Igor Marquez. And this is a really fascinating idea here. They are new works for a Baroque orchestra. In fact, it's the Nuevo Mundo Baroque Orchestra in Chile. What a wonderful group they are, too. I'm going to read from the liner notes of this album, Imagined Roots. The idea behind it is to frame writing for historical instruments within contemporary perspectives. The title alludes to this notion and suggests a music that is speculative, non-existent, or historically and hypothetically possible, while still being bound to the past by its instrumentation and timbre. The focus of the project brought together composers who share a common denominator, the relevance of pitch, in their musical discourses. Yet each of these artists has their own individual voice, expressed in a variety of compositional universes. The tracklist also suggests a synergetic and logical sequence, like that of a concept album, manifested through recurring harmonic purviews and strategically placed contrasts. I'll be able to play all four of the pieces and talk with each of the composers in turn about them. So let's jump right back in.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the description, and I really, Felipe talked about it a little bit, but I love this idea of a possibility of a hypothetical historicity, or you know, historical hypotheticism. I don't know how to say it in English, but I really like that idea.
History, I think.
Say it again.
Contrafactual history, I feel like, is a way to refer to that.
Like, yeah, as if early music had gone a different direction or something, right? That's a really cool way to phrase it. I like that a lot. Well, you guys have
Baroque punk. How about that?
Baroque punk, indeed. you guys have all talked about it a little bit, but let's if we could just have each of you describe your piece, the title, the inspiration, and let's go in order. So we'll start with Felipe.
So my piece is called In Illo Tempore, which means back in that time, I guess, something like that. It's a very harmonic piece. So I think that's the link I found with Baroque music to create my piece. It's basically a sequence of chords that is orchestrated, and there are transitions between those chords, and it explodes the sonorities, the timbres of the different instruments. And I didn't use any explicit reference to music from the past, but in the last section, I kind of included a sort of like false counterpoint between the two sackbuts, and it's arranged by the other instruments. So that could be like the most explicit reference to early music in my piece, but mainly is a very harmonic piece, a very harmonic based piece, and it uses microtonality. So there are different tunings. The santur is tuned a quarter tone lower. The oboe is in 415 hertz, but that doesn't count because it becomes like a transposing instrument. But there are a lot of microtonal inflections that add color to the harmony. And I was very free in the developing of the piece. So there's even like a flamenco cadence that I stole from a Paco de Lucía record that I included there, and it's located in a very emotionally strong part of the piece, that gives like a sort of like a altered Phrygian microtonalized cadence sort of at some point. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's good. What I could say about my piece is primarily a harmonic based composition that explodes the color of the instruments and add microtones to enrich the harmony.
Yeah, my piece is called Venga mi amado, which means come, my beloved. It's a quotation from the Song of Songs in the Bible. I think I mentioned this previously a little bit, but part of my idea, our idea as a group, was to learn and to get familiarized with the traditions that our performers were already familiar with. And then at some point, the composition process for me is very complicated. I think of the forum the most unstable one in many ways, but compositionally for sure. And which is not a good thing, by the way. I'm not bragging here, right? I wish it was different. But I was trying to find my way through this, and eventually I arrived at this piece by Mauricio Kago, which he wrote for historical instruments, and he took an approach that I tried to emulate of going to these instruments as sort of with this the same wonder that you would go, but without, you know, typically, but without the baggage necessarily, without knowing all the ins and outs and the repertoire, and try to reimagine them. And I did that, and I included the use of the human voice, because all of these performers were also singers. I had seen a video where they're shown singing as well as they're playing, improvisation and collaboration and certain freedom and certain aleatoric techniques. We produced about 8 minutes of music. And I was not in Chile at that point in time during the recording process due to some family concerns, but Vicente was, my composer colleague, and he agreed very graciously to conduct the rehearsals and the recording itself. And then after I had those 8 minutes of music, I listened to them again and was like, this is good. And Vicente did a wonderful job, and the ensemble did a great job too, but I was feeling very insecure and once again unstable. And I decided to cut. We had already recorded, and I decided to cut part of it out and just preserve that which I felt was most honest to my vision for that piece. And so I ended up with a 4-minute piece after the fact. Thank goodness we had enough material to, you know, to get things from and make something that still, I think, has some semblance of coherence, and that's how Venga mi amado was born. It was turbulent. It was a difficult, prolonged birth. But I think in the end I have something that is, that I don't know. I think my decision to cut the materials was ultimately a wise one, at least in because it expresses something that is truer to my vision for the piece. And so it's a weird combination of textures and clear pitches and certain multiphonics, all, I guess, maybe to display or portray or convey somehow the idea of this coming with your beloved in, by the way, both senses of the word there. But let's keep it PG, so I won't say anything else about that. But yes, there's a certain eroticism that I wanted to explore in this piece for sure.
Yeah, it's a Song of Songs, right?
That's right.
Venga.
I decided to work to base my work on the Baroque dance, the Chaconne. That's the title of the piece. Chaconne is the Spanish translation of the term. The Chaconne is thought to have originated in the New World, which is actually coincidentally the name of the Baroque Orchestra, so the New World Baroque Orchestra. And it was popularized in the Old World, in Europe, only afterwards. And then it became obviously very international. And of course, once it became European and international, it started circulating back in the New World. And I decided to give, you know, this back and forth route to the Chaconne an additional twist. So I started working. I wanted to do a theme and variations type of piece based on a Chaconne by the Spanish composer Gaspar Sanz, which I don't know if he is very well known in the for your listeners. He was a Baroque guitar composer. He wrote wonderful pieces. One of them is a Chaconne, and I didn't want to reveal the trick early in the piece, so I saved the theme for last. So it's not really a theme and variations, rather a variations and theme at the end, where you will hear the original piece orchestrated. For several minutes, you will hear, you know, textures and I guess subtle references to the original piece by Sanz. And once the piece gets underway, the theme becomes more obvious and more obvious until you reach the climax of the piece, with which presents the piece in its quote unquote original form, albeit orchestrated rather than just on a guitar. Thank you.
Okay, Vicente, you're up.
Okay, well, my piece, Y tendrás frutos en tu torre, that is a line from a poem by Vicente Huidobro, a Chilean poet that I like very much. And the poem itself is called The Windmill, which I thought was a nice kind of image to, you know, kind of image metaphor for the kind of continuo sound that my piece has, where the dulcimer, the gamba, there's actually a kind of early version of a double bass on the ensemble, which is kind of anachronistic, but it's cool. It has frets, so it's kind of closer to the gamba sound. Where those instruments plus autochthonous Chilean instrument called the guitarrón chileno. They kind of form a kind of continuo sound. And I never do this in any of my works, but there's also kind of an autobiographical component to the title, because my first years of life, I lived in a windmill in the region of Chile where the guitarrón chileno is from. It's kind of undergoing kind of a revival right now, that instrument. But it's this weird offshoot of the lute. And I'm very interested in it as an instrument, because it has 25 strings. It's a plucked string instrument, 25 strings, has five courses of strings. It's actually a very heavy instrument to play, because you have to bar every single note if you're pressing 3 to 5 to 6 strings. And it sounds an octave, so it has a really rich sonority, kind of reminiscent of some large harpsichords, kind of that like bright octave sound. But my first years of life, I lived in a windmill in this part of Chile where the instrument is from. So I kind of, I liked having that connection there in the title. And I kind of used the piece as an excuse or a reason to get deeper into that and the musical tradition of that specific instrument, which is called the canto a lo poeta. It's a very rich musical tradition. And, you know, I feel like I'm just scratching the surface of it for myself. But I would love to keep learning about it, so that's kind of what I intend to do. And the piece itself, a lot of my music kind of will, I like using the word steal. It will steal kind of bits and pieces of different musical languages, and use it to make a music that kind of seems to be, you know, in this case, a late Renaissance, early Baroque composition, but isn't. Like, I like having that experience of confronting a music that, you know, it sounds like something, it walks like something, it talks like something, but you know that it isn't. That kind of contradiction is something that I look for in my music. So the piece uses a lot of kind of idiomatic trills and phrases and kinds of baroque articulation. But there's always some, you know, or like certain kinds of canons, like that, those kinds of resources, but you can always tell that there's something strange about it. You know, it's kind of like you're watching TV and there's some beautiful scene of a suburban house and a family and kids, and suddenly you see like a cockroach walking over the lens of the camera or something, just like looking for that kind of strange thing happening. Maybe not as explicit as that, but that kind of contradiction.
That's a very vivid description.
Well, it's an image that I studied with George Lewis at Columbia, and it's an image that he would use a lot, and it just has stuck with me since.
Okay.
So I think about that a lot.
Yeah, I know George. That's great. Thank you.
Raíces Imaginadas, this album that I've featured on the program today, is available on Bandcamp, so take a look for it. Again, that translates as Imagined Roots. And it features the wonderful Nuevo Mundo Baroque Orchestra, so thanks to them so much, and it was made possible with support from the government of Chile. Thanks so much to Tomás, Igor, Felipe, and Vicente for talking with me and for releasing this wonderful album. Relevant Tones is a program of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of bringing creative music to life every day. Find out more at acmusic.org. For Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.